Now, how do you adapt that for your first aiders up at the, what do you call them?
Paramedical students. Well, one, I found out that if they...
Now, they are 10th grade.
No, they're 10, 11, and 12. Well, one, I found that they can go into a class and learn fundamentals, like making beds and this sort of thing. And they can go up on the floor, and they're just like a bunch of cement posts walking around doing it. They don't have their heart into it with the patients. They don't have it into their role as a hostess in the hospital, which they are. And so I do a pretty strong indoctrination, actually almost one whole lesson on who you are and why you're here. And I don't tell them why they're there. I just plain old out and say, I want you to tell me what are you doing here. And you. And get them to answer me.
And you're a little blunt.
And half of them don't know. And I say, well, then you
have... Even though they've covered that in the class.
Yes. And I'll say, okay, you joined the paramed clubs. Why did you join the paramed clubs? What is it? What's its purpose? And half of them don't know this. And I said, are you in the habit of joining things and you don't know what they are? So we go on from there. And actually, they look like somebody slapped them in the face most of the time. It's a little rough. But I think I plainly tell them if you aren't here for certain purposes, I think you should just leave. Because we have a full quota. And I am very serious about this. And if they don't have full intent of going in there to represent the hospital when they're allowed there to work, this is a privilege they're given. A very big privilege. And if they don't take the responsibility of it and feel a concern for their... you might say image, because their image is the hospital that they have no business in there. And so I try to make them feel that this is a privilege, that what they do and what they say and how they act at all times reflects on the hospital, and that they really carry a tremendous responsibility. They're not going up there just to make up a bed, and they're not going up there just to carry a water pot.
You can't stand up behind them.
And
tell them.
I walk right down in between them and ask them. Look right straight at them and ask them. It scares them.
Blind, you know.
They shouldn't. If you just go in there and just start talking to them, they're just going to not think of it too much. And to get a point across to them, for instance, I'll kind of have been talking to them about little things all along. Now, there are two or three points that I want to get across to the paramedics in the whole 6 weeks. If they learn those three things, they'll be safe. If they don't learn them, I don't want them up there either. And one of them is that they never assume anything. I said, you either know it or you don't know it. And I said, don't ever tell me if I ask you something that you thought it. You either knew it was right or you didn't know it was right. And if you don't know it's right, you will find out. Because I said, these are human lives you're working with. They're not toys or books or anything else. They're people.
I'm going to the
movie. You're not going to the movie. You're out there to work. And so then later on I'll sneak it in and say, okay, I'll be teaching them something like how to carry a tray. This sounds simple. You go take a tray in a room and you put it down in front of somebody. Yeah, that's what it sounds like. But it isn't that at all. Okay, in the first place, if you walk in a room, what's the first thing that you want to know? I'll ask them the question. You want to know whose room you're going into, whose tray you've got. I said, suppose you didn't bother to really check that number closely or the person's name. Suppose they had switched patients from one room to the other in an hour's time and didn't change the number on the room door, and you neglected calling that person's name. This is one thing I've always taught them, is you make sure, if you have to go up and look at the thing on their arm, you make sure who you're working with. Because the things differ, treatment for one differs so much more than the other. And they aren't aware of the changes on the floor because they're only there for a few hours. I'm not either. I'm one of the most cautious ones when I work there on the weekend. They laugh about it sometimes, but I said, I'm sorry. I'll even be sure I won't do it. And because I'm doable too, you know. And so I said, okay, suppose you didn't check that, and this person was a diabetic, and you gave them a regular diet, and no one knew it, did you? Really? Maybe you wouldn't know it because it was careless, and this person could go in coma that afternoon, you know, going to shock. Or what your situation might be. And I there talked to this business of to know, and I said, if you had really known who it was, you wouldn't have made the mistake. And someone tells you to go down and get a candy bar, and you don't go and check it. See? Okay, can you have a candy bar? It sounds simple. Or a drink of water. Can you have a drink of water? Well, you may be going to surgery in 2 hours, and everything may be completely set. He may have had food abstained for 12 hours, and he may have had his pre-op medication, and you go ahead and give him a drink of water, and you can't go. It's just that simple. Not knowing and not being sure. They said they're like, as I say, like someone stopped them. But I'll kind of go along with it, and then all of a sudden I'll pop it to them about, well, it is serious, and try to make them feel that what they do, they should be cautious.
When I'm why, they see, Johnny picks up the horse business, and he picks it up himself. And he doesn't have to have someone taking through that, you see, and show up responsibility.
He's probably been kicked before. Or fallen off the horse. Or had enough experience to teach him. You can do that if you're riding a horse, but you can't do it when you're working with people.
I think right you now. Got in the horse people business without any, like that.
Just quick, but don't you know he had some experience, though, to teach him? If no one told him, he learned it.
Well, he was old enough to learn it.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't a child. And he'd been pushed around.
That's what I mean. Somewhere or other.
But now these children haven't been pushed on tall, have they?
Some of them.
But not much.
Not much.
They're still children.
They're still children, but some of them have hard ways to go at home.
Yeah. But now Johnny, see, he's been pushed around and he's all up.
I do some things to them too, like I actually craft them into role playing situations. Even with large groups like this, I'll get a group of volunteers, and I say, if you make a mistake, don't laugh because it may be you, you know, but let's just see how this will work. And I'll give them a hypothetical situation, see how they get out of it. Situations like, I tell them never reveal any information. I don't care what it is. I said, you can talk, read a newspaper before you go to work, or tell them about the ball game, tell them about your boyfriend. But don't involve yourself in any discussion of the patient's illness because you're not equipped to handle it. And the further you stay away from it, the better off you'll be. Just tell them, I said, you can always refer it back to a nurse. You'll go get a nurse or you refer it to the doctor, but you never involve yourself. And I said, suppose you're taking care of a patient and you said, she said she had a pain down here in her side. She said, and she gave you a few more symptoms. And you say, well, gee, my Aunt Jane had that too. And then the patient might turn around and say, well, what happened to Aunt Jane? Well, she died. You can get caught just like that. You can get caught so easy. Just simple like that. And another.
Well, now, isn't it possible for the children to involve themselves in the thing like the horses and not have to be involved?
Too risky.
When they go to school, that means that they release responsibility. And somebody else then is taking initiative, responsibility to get them involved in certain things.
Most of the time. I don't think many children voluntarily involve themselves. you teach in the grammar school and talk to most teachers, they'll probably tell you the same thing.
Well, as long as they've got to do something, they've got to play, you know. When they play, they involve themselves.
Yes, they do. It's pleasurable. That's what I was telling you. It's the difference between him going over there and riding those horses, because this is a pleasurable experience that he's seeking. And not all children go to school because it's pleasurable. They go because they're told to go.
They don't go just because it's...
Because they're eager for knowledge? No, they don't go because they're eager for knowledge. They're told to get up and go. All you got to do is be a parent and find out how many times you have to shove them out of the door some morning. If Dad had his way, he wouldn't have gone to school last month. Not any morning.
He filled his stomach and got quiet?
Yes.
Oh, yes. I see him out there robbing all the time, but, boy.
Yeah, just sit in the tree and watch a poor little bird. He lays in some eggs. And he looks at me. You got on the way with that problem you had?
No, sir. No, sir. We still haven't solved it. You thought of anything else?
Well, not so much. You know, a coon doesn't have no saliva gland in his mouth. He likes to wash everything that he eats in water.
Yeah.
And he's a peculiar, real peculiar kind of an animal. And there's many things you might do that would solve the problem. Now, he just as dubious and suspicious as any animal on earth, most of his, anything like of his type. And if you had something, even a scarecrow or something like that, that it would, he would notice it was different. He could move it about, and the main thing is it should have some kind of an odor about it that he'll detect.
Yeah.
If he does, he is afraid of it. He won't come back.
Mm-hmm.
He won't come back for several nights. It may take a week, 10 days.
Uh-huh.
He may come close enough to look around, and if you happen to see that, he won't come in. Now, one of the best things on earth you could have is to catch one and tie him, put him in a box. You ought to have him in a box, something like that, where he can live all right and get air and he'll howl.
Oh.
Oh, he'll howl, sound like a dog.
Uh-huh.
When the other coons get to the end, if they ever hear that, why, mister, they gone.
Yeah.
It's like I told you. And the plans I give you will work. You had one coon, and take the best way to do it is put him in that box. But you see, they may come, the field's so big, I'm satisfied. So they come in on the other side.
That's right.
You have to have more than one, you see. It takes so many.
Yeah.
And so I thought of that even while I was talking to you. But it's just exactly like I expressed it there. It may sound funny, but the devil won't eat or drink his own broth. No, in any species of insect, most animal either.
Uh-huh.
And one coon put in a pot and stewed up or something like that, it'll put an odor there for him to smell that he doesn't like.
Yeah.
He's going to be missing. I guarantee you that he'll be missing.
Yeah.
He'll vacate. And it'll last a good while too with him. So he'll stewed up, take that and just sprinkle it. Other things you might put on. Just could spray a watermelon with it, and he wouldn't touch it, no way he could fix it. And it wouldn't hurt the watermelon.
Yeah.
Lots of different things. As I said, that you make it go as far as good, you put it in a pot and kind of stew it and just touch a little of it.
Uh-huh.
Take very little anywhere around and drop it on a watermelon.
Uh-huh.
He wouldn't bite it. Yeah. He wouldn't bother it.
Uh-huh.
No, sir, if that sense there, he wouldn't bother it in no way you couldn't harm to bother it.
Yeah.
So that's one of the quickest and best ways is to make it act quick is to take it and you can walk around, you know, one half of a coon or something or other. And stewed in the pot would make enough odor to it. And the water mixed, maybe.
Uh-huh.
Soup that you'd have with it.
Yeah.
To cover a whole lot of territory.
Yeah.
If it was 100 acres of watermelon, you'd go all the way around.
Yeah.
And touch it, had a paint brush or anything, and dab it 10% of it on watermelon now. That one's safe.
Yeah.
It's safe.
Yeah.
It's been a long time. Dude.
Yeah.
I know he'd come back there before he'd be right and ready to move.
Well, now that's working the coon's nature against him, because he's the dubious, you see.
Yes.
So he gonna smell that and he won't bother.
That's right. He's gonna smell it and he ain't gonna bother. And you could surround the field and do pretty well, but if any gap left where they can get in, they might come in. And just let them hear one howl, you know. Well, they just like everything. If you catch one in the trap, he'll howl and kick on some. If there's a bunch of them there, they're going to leave. And it'll be several days before they offer to come back.
Now, where is he going?
They can find another one, though. No question doubt about that.
Yeah. Just keep right after him.
Yes. He used to be when I first came to Florida.
How the bluff will crow?
Yes, sir.
No, I sure would love to know.
Well, that's as simple as 1, 2, 3.
Well, you may not have them like you used to have them, Mr. Boyd, but you sure have got them.
Yes, sir. You know, there used to be thousands of them, of course, you know, going to Boyd Island on Orange Lake when I first came to Florida and cleaned the same way.
Yeah.
Now, you just take your grocery twine.
Oh, you come into Florida?
Yes, I wasn't born and raised. I was born and raised about Lost Georgia.
Oh, it's about Lost Georgia.
Yeah. Now, I had a patch of English peas, a whole bag of peas is planted, and they lit down on that in the morning at daylight. And there's enough of them to just about clean that up.
Yeah.
I had some more. And so you just take some stakes, take the twine, put it up about the man's head height.
Yeah.
Where he can see it, round the field. Wouldn't want light inside of it.
Is that right?
He's gone.
Is that right? Have you seen that tribe?
Seen it? Now, you what I told you? They ate that sack up in one day.
Yeah.
And then I put the twine around that, and they never put that cell down in there no more.
Oh, you done it yourself?
Done it myself.
Well, that's
I did
enough.
It myself.
Yeah.
I didn't have no trouble about any peas. They'll eat up a bag or two of peas. There's a bunch of them big enough them days. All they wanted to come in that daylight,
yeah.
And they'd ruin it before they left it.
Yeah.
A thousand of them.
Huh.
Two.
You know what somebody told me just the other day? They read it in some little magazine, Mr. Boyd, that if the crows was bothering you out in the garden, now they just thinking about a little garden, get you some of these little balloons like the children play with. And put a few of them out there on strings where the wind can blow them.
That's good enough. That's the same thing. Okay, they'll even see that twine.
Yeah.
You don't have tiny strings to it. You see that?
Yeah.
They won't light down inside of it.
Yeah.
They go around at your English feet.
Yeah.
And them little balloons is would help. The little wind will blow them around, make them shake and move.
Let me ask Mr. Mountain something over here.
Balloons attack.
And Barry said we're going to have to feed them over there or something. They hadn't had anything to eat.
Feed them something to kill them, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess so.
Yeah. Have you got, a little pair of pliers that cut the nose off and cut? I need to cut a little wire on my calf over there. They're working good.
Damn, that's good.
They ride good.
Why, old Sugar Man bought a brand new truck here yesterday. Now they're rotting old mirrors about to fall off of them. He sent it back to some boy to have all kinds of things done to it. Brand new car.
Brand new.
Well, I could tell when I drove that car, was in good shape.
Don't go off, Mr. Boyd. Let me, buying a new car is no insurance against
no.
Having to work for
you. That's right, because a lot of them you would give trouble right on.
Yeah.
Sure they do.
You know, Johnny, he got an old truck up there. You know that truck? He wanted to sell it. I don't think he'd come over there. I told him to come by and see you. As you know people, you know,
yeah.
Who want
well,
things
I
like
sent
that.
Him to one man, but
Oh, you know about it?
Yeah. And but the man wanted to trade him a little car, so he never did buy it.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Oh, what I was going to tell you about that.
That's a good car, that car, too.
I haul the back end of that, the trunk of it.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, they had another car up there, but I wouldn't mind having it. It was a one same color with a black interior. It's an older model than that, but I'd be darned if that thing wasn't in good shape. Boy, it was in good shape. And I went back up to get it, and the darn thing was gone. It's a black and white.
Yeah.
I mean, red, solid red with black interior.
This thing,
well, yours is better than that.
This starts right off. All you got to do is push the accelerator down just a little bit, and it hadn't failed there. Not as long as them parts and plugs hold up, be fine on it.
Them big cars don't even feel like they hold up good. They sure do.
I tell you, just, I don't know anything more of a nuisance than to have to just grind.
Right. Well, now that Rambler was noted for that grinding.
Yeah.
And you just one down here at the edge of town just like yours.
Yeah.
And that rotten thing grinding, grinding, grinding. I did yesterday. It'll crack in a minute, just keep grinding.
Yeah.
And I tell you one thing, her axle was just like yours. I know she's popping.
Oh.
And Fresh said, no, she's going to have some trouble in that. Too much snatching and popping.
Yeah. I wish you had something to work on the front end, something like that. I haven't done that, and I ought to do it, don't you reckon?
What's that? On that crack?
You know, check on the front
no.
end.
No. Might find something wrong. That thing didn't leave it go. just keep an eye on your tire. You can tell if it wears.
Yeah.
All of them will wear a little bit on these roads.
Yeah.
So that front end is bouncing up and down like this here, and every day I try to bounce up and down, their wheels doing like this here, they gonna wear a little.
Oh.
You can't watch them. The car ain't got enough miles on it for the front end to be in bad shape.
No.
Sure hadn't. You keep an eye on them tires. They start wearing, they'll just swap them, you know, or either find out why they're wearing. See?
Okay.
That's what I do. Get on the down with it, you know. And I get along better that way.
I've been by him several times. You busy.
I just left a while ago. I just got back and went out
and
Now I got to go get Thrasher's old truck too in a minute. What's on here?
Oh, he's got
a whole lot of fur.
Oh, yeah. I heard him. It's been 2 years before his wife died. I was over there at a time or two. You know, I just, he's got behind.
You ought to have a tape recorder.
That's what he got.
Thing I want to tell you about. Maybe a little expense to it, but not a great deal either. You know, most of us set steel traps.
Yeah.
Well, got to be pretty smart to set a steel trap in a trail where a coon walks and make him get in it. You got put things around it to make him, force him to set in it. Anything that he can see the least bit or something of that kind, or have any suspicion, he'll step over to go around it.
Yeah.
And now I'll give you a better thing than a steel trap.
Uh-huh.
You take you about an inch auger. Inch wouldn't be too large. Put about like this. An inch is about large enough, maybe five or a larger. And go around and root of the tree, up on the tree a little piece, and drill a hole in, slant wise, in a root.
Mm-hmm.
Had you some horseshoe nails or any other kind of nails, and sharpen them on the end with a file. See here, and you drive them in, looping like this, slant wise.
Mm-hmm.
Let the points come together down there, just here, like this.
Yeah.
Down in that auger hole little piece.
Yeah.
And get you a can of sardines. Drop a little piece of sardine in there. Smear it around on the outside a little bit too. Rub it, touch it around on them nails. And let him find that hole. He'd almost break, he just looked, stick his nose, a foot in the place.
Mm-hmm.
He don't stick his nose down in the quicker he will his foot, but there's a hole he's going to. Gonna stick his nose in there, and he's gonna stick his foot in there.
Mm-hmm.
Don't mind, stick his foot in first.
Yeah.
And he'll push his foot in there. I don't care if it's a squeeze.
Yeah.
Don't worry, he'll try to get it in there if you smell that sardine.
Oh.
He's going, see, yeah, he's going to shove it in there. When he goes pull back, them nails will catch it.
Oh.
And there's your steel trap. Best thing you ever saw.
Better
than a real steel trap.
Better than a regular steel trap. Well, you know.
Now, if he doesn't know it's put off, you'll have him of them, or several of them, maybe the next morning if you could work that scheme.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you go plant that field in watermelons again.
Yeah.
Or it'd be there the next time.
Yeah.
Just go around and bait them and catch the coon.
You know, Mr. Rob Wood was out there the other day with a steel trap. Had a brand new one.
Yeah. And you'd be surprised how long they can detect the scent of a human being. I don't know how many hours it would take. I don't have any way of testing it.
Mm-hmm.
But he'll surprise you. He can tell it. He can get the odor of it. Somehow or another, it must be for 4 or 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
It had to come rain or something of that kind to wash it off. He can get that odor of where a person has walked or been for a good long time after you've asked. You put him out first dark. Maybe it'd be 12 o'clock before he come in there because he could smell the odor of you.
Mm-hmm.
Where you walk and where you set your trap. You have to get down there and put your hands on the ground and set a trap.
Yeah.
And you got to conceal the trap, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time you do that, why, you done a lot smart around there where he's supposed to walk, and it's a hard matter to catch him. But this other proposition there, that works. You put that sardine there, it just leads him right on to it. He can smell the odor of it, and he'll go to it, stick his foot in there.
This?
Exactly, it wasn't in the shape that I'm in, but I had a spell yesterday morning. And I don't know what's the trouble with some pressure in my head from my eye trouble or something else working. Anyhow, I went to Dr. Strange last October. He didn't tell me exactly what was the matter with me, but he doctored me up out of it pretty quick.
Uh-huh.
And in other words, I didn't have no more trouble.
Oh.
He gave me shots.
Uh-huh.
And after the first shot, I didn't have the next particle of trouble.
Is that right?
And but he continued on. He gave me about 2 shots every time I went down there.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like that's what really done the work.
Oh, I see.
It may be, good morning. It's just pressure from my eye trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, it may be something else in connection with it, low blood pressure, something like that.
Well, let me tell you.
So I got to get to Doc Strange.
Yeah, it's going on 11 o'clock right now.
Yes?
Yeah.
Yes, I could go to the hospital, but I don't hardly feel like it's absolutely necessary. And go to the hospital without something might have to be done in the eyes. To do, I have to go to Charlotte Pinkett. And he'd have to be a doctor already.
Yeah.
And they have to take your eyes out of your head. I tell you what he told me, you know, they don't tell you too much.
No, they never tell you much.
I was up there once and I asked him, you know, my right eye is much worse than my left eye. And I asked him, he said, you're going to operate on my eye? I said, which would be the one you'd operate on? He says, whichever one that got out of control. See that? Now that's the way I got that. Just by asking that question. It's liable to get out of control. The medicine just doesn't control. That may be my trouble now. I'm putting the medicine in there and even got it in my pocket to carry it with me and I'm not going to be at home. And see my eyes ever so frequently. So this morning, my head was giving me trouble.
Uh-huh.
Got some eye drops. Every minute, my head, as I was after when I first woke up, so I got to my eye drops and put to my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like it began to ease it up yesterday morning. The one spell was all. I didn't have another bit of trouble all day and felt fine all day long.
Mm-hmm.
So, maybe that's where my trouble is going to be. I don't know where Dr. Strange will detect it. Got it all figured out in mind what you did it.
So
it's all the next worse, and I'd like to make arrangements to get there, and I don't know how long you're there.
Yeah, well, you go, it's going on left, you don't want to leave then. There's several things I wanted to bring up to you. When was you associated with Mr. and Ms. Patterson?
Associated with Mr. and Ms. Patterson?
Mm-hmm.
Did you know they cut a raft of a bunch of timber back there in what you call the old Cypress Spur in River City?
Oh.
And then Franklin bought that land. Timber was for sale. They sold it. The Matheson bowed off. Georgia. Matheson managed finance the deal. Patterson run the mill at Mickanooka Junction.
Yeah.
Cut all that timber. Well, I was right in, they was right in there around me, you know. I had to build several cattle gaps for them to get in there. On account of my crops and things. Stock. And I thought pretty well acquainted with the folks, liked them fine. Patterson had some thoroughbred for John Hall and give me a meal, and I guess like I was telling you about beans and bean season, some of you don't have John Hall to eat.
Yeah.
Sleep. And I lost my nice meal by being in trouble with beans. Had to get them all. And I hate it. So had some pepper over there too in the field, and he told me, he said his mother was the beating the person for pepper you ever saw, so I give him the patch. They went there and they, I don't know what they did with it, but they cleaned it up. They got all the pepper and water there. I guess they canned it up. Part of it, eat what they wanted. And quite a lot of little dealings. He wanted some clay to build his furnace over there, you know, for his sawmill. So I told him where to get it and give him the clay.
Oh.
He takes clay and puts salt with it and builds. So he told me, I never had knew that before, but he says he put plenty of salt with it, why it holds up a whole lot better.
Oh.
You mix your clay.
Yeah. Well, I never heard of that, Mr.
But it helps keep dampness in it. That's what makes it heavy.
Oh.
Sweat and the salt in it, it'll sweat and it'll keep it damp and it makes it harden.
Oh yeah.
Makes the best dirt furnace you could build with salt and clay.
Oh.
I worked in watermelons and gathered his watermelons for him down there, you know, and packed them. And they was growing some watermelons too.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't have nobody but me.
Oh, you pack them too?
Yes, sir. I pack watermelons on every sidetrack over half of Marion County and all over Larchwood. Was a sidetrack in the whole county. But I knew of it, I didn't pack watermelons on.
Yeah.
Fed down to Marsh and to lower this way till you get all out in here near the high spring.
Yeah.
Games were there, down the pass, everywhere, Rochelle, Gold Park, Hawthorne, and even far up to Windsor,